This is RSBNB Update, episode 565, recorded Thursday, May 5th, 2016, The Barrows Brady Bunch. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update. Dave is here once again this week.
Well met, my friends.
And joining us to just sit in with us on this episode, someone we haven't heard from in quite a while, is Paul PFK99's Silverwoods 9. You guys might remember Paul. He was first come on the show, I think that was in 07 or 08. We ran a contest, and the contest involved I think posting a picture or doing something outrageous on RuneScape, and his entry was to get married to someone
had
in RuneScape.
The Valentine's Day theme. Come on, get
right,
the story right
it.
If you're going to tell it every single time.
That's it.
I actually remember that competition.
Yeah, and Paul won.
Now Chris is talking about it too. Great.
So, I mean, that's what you're known
for.
Juan.
Yeah, it's, you got to go all out.
Yes.
If you're going to do something, you got to do it right.
Exactly. And that's why I hold you up as an example every time we have a competition.
Yep. Love you too, Shane.
Even if you're not here.
Yep.
All right. So this week's RS update brings in Mega May Weekends, and the ports boost for the month of May. As you guys might have imagined, Mega May kind of somehow relates to the woman in player-owned ports called Meg. So Mega May. Initial impressions, how does this compare to the scavenger hunts and RuneScape road trips that we've had of years past?
I feel like, I mean, it's got the same sort of theme. I mean, it's not completely, like, serious, but it still sort of has that frivolity, I guess, if that's a word. It still holds that theme with just kind of a daily... I don't even know what you would call it, just daily grind.
Daily distraction and diversion, perhaps.
Yeah.
That's different than what we have normally in game.
Is it nice and quick? I haven't actually done
Oh, yeah, of course. So far, each one has only taken 5 minutes, and they've been rather quite comical. one, you were hunting for a rabbit that disappeared in the Varrock Castle. Another one, you were looking for a missing squirrel. And
squirrel.
Another one, you were trying to figure out what happened when someone burgled Thelia's clothes shop in Varrock. So, and of course, these are all parts of a various series, so I imagine we'll be seeing more of these as we go out throughout the month. But as it stands right now, they all have taken about 5 minutes or less to complete, and you can, of course, get a full listing of them when you log in and you get the Mega May interface popping up on screen. Just click that, and it'll tell you what's done and what hasn't been done.
Speaking of the interface, I don't mean to interrupt, but I can't be the only one that thinks the little pop-up thing, her facial expression, is rather interesting. It seems very derpy to me.
I didn't notice that. Do you have a screenshot of it, or?
Yeah, I can post a screenshot.
Or do you mean just
it.
When you?
What's the
click it?
Isn't there a button to get it to come back up?
Yeah, that's something else I was wondering. If you close the interface, how do you get it back up?
It tells you that you can bring it back, but I kind of don't pay attention.
I'm not sure.
I'll just log out.
It's not that intuitive, and I mean, if you're a member, you can go. Pull the interface up again by talking to Meg at ports, but I mean, you don't necessarily want to do that.
Right.
So, but
I logged out; it didn't show up again. I thought it would.
No, okay, maybe it's just a daily thing then.
No, it says you can get to it. I just don't remember how.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's one small issue, but I'll just wait for Dave's screenshot of the face to appear. But. While you're doing this, there will be one new case each day, and you have until June 13th
to go to the quest dialogue thing, and then
the
click on
menu.
Featured, and then the top left is quest and Mega May.
Oh, okay, all right. Well,
she's very enthusiastic, and also surprised.
Yeah, well, I mean, you do have to kind of be enthusiastic for this kind of promotion, because as it stands right now, for each completed case, you get a small XP lamp, And mm-hmm. as it as you progress through them, five cases, you get the sock puppet, which is a override for your main head. 10 cases, you get some port stuff. 15 cases, the private investigator outfit. 20 cases is the sock pet, which is a Turoth wearing socks. 25 cases is one large lamp and one large XP star. Well, 30 cases is a huge lamp and a huge XP star. So as it stands right now, we're pretty much going to be targeting the 5 and 15 thresholds for this because, I mean, who hasn't ever wanted a trench coat in RuneScape, right?
That's exactly right.
Because you can see that on the screenshot right here. Dave, were you able to get that screenshot of the face?
Yeah, it's I threw it in Skype.
All right, let's have a look at this and see what it is. Oh boy, that does look rather surprised.
I feel like they could have done a little bit better.
Yeah, let me just make this larger so we can all see this here. But okay,
just imagine her making like a really stupid voice, like
"Shut up, Meg."
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know about you guys, but Meg was always an annoyance in player-owned ports.
She really was. Her ignorance really kind of struck my last nerve. Yeah. I know it was all in fun, but it's like, okay, really?
Yeah, and I mean, when it comes down to it, these kind of things are, you know, yearly events, and I mean, they don't necessarily have to be serious and whatnot. I mean,
yeah.
I guess we could ask you how you feel, Dave. How do you feel that your companion in RuneScape has gone?
What do you mean?
Oh, remember the road trip guy?
He was modeled after you. No, I am sad to see him go. I would love to see him return because my legacy seems to have lived on through RSBMP update.
When I first pointed that out, it said, "Are you saying that Dave looks like a monkey?"
Yikes.
I remember when it first came out, you messaged me, I don't know if it was Skype or what, and you're like, "Oh, I didn't realize you were on the front page of RuneScape." And I was like, "Oh, like what? I thought I had like won a competition or like there was like a drawing or I didn't know if I had like won a Rune Labs thing." And I'm like, "Oh, what?" And then you linked me the picture and I'm like, "Oh my God."
Anyways, so the sock puppet can replace your chat head. Yeah, it's going to be...
I don't know why anyone would want to do that, honestly. I mean, it's a fun, neat little feature, I guess. But
yeah, it is kind of silly. And I mean, I don't think there's much else to say behind this other than unless it were to trail into the Eastern Lands content, perhaps, or maybe a player-owned ports update, then
right.
I think we could get excited about this at the end of the month. And I am kind of hoping that we'll see some kind of... wider story trend and linkage happen between all these cases, but I am not holding my breath. So with that, I'm content to leave this part of the update as it is.
Yeah.
Do you have to have access to ports to be able to get in?
No, you do not. You can access it through the interface, so you don't need access to ports to do it, which I mean is understandable.
Yeah.
So.
Yep, that's good.
Anyways, also cool. This month we do have May weekends. So there's going to be a series of weekends this month. The first weekend is Port Skills, which is, of course, the 6th to the 9th. Second weekend will be Dungeoneering and Raids. Third weekend, Bossing and Slayer. And the fourth weekend will focus on mini games. For the first Ports weekend, you will have the following available to you. Increased node spawns and double reward points in RuneSpan. Double chance to find relics, Scepter of the Gods, and Black Ibis gear and Pyramid Plunder. Enriched Wisps spawn every 10 minutes rather than 20 minutes. Divination springs last twice as long. Fishing spots move half as often. Big Chompa base XP plus 50%. Agility core slap bonus plus 50%. Flat packs are created in noted form. Cooking burn chance is reduced by 5%. And chance to save a secondary ingredient with Herblore at 2%. So these are, of course, relating to all skills that you need in player-owned ports. So if you are looking to train some of these this weekend, perfect weekend to do so. I think the fishing spots and the divination wisps one is probably the best one out of this bunch. Definitely. And maybe the runespan one as well.
Yeah, I was going to say RuneSpan, especially from a completionist perspective, because that is one of the more AD requirements. I think it's over 150 or 200 hours normally to get a Steam One, and pretty much for no other reason than to get the logo on your outfit. It doesn't even give any sort of skill boost. So I will definitely be at RuneSpan all weekend.
Aye. Best of luck to you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, at least it's not that click intensive. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's AFK cable, so I can watch a show or play another game or whatever. But yeah.
Right. And then, of course, through the rest of the month, you'll get some special bonuses for player-owned ports, including the ability to run 25 voyages per day instead of usual 15, plus 30% normal resources and trade goods, and the Cirilla's special voyage available on Saturday and Sundays, as well on Thursdays as per usual. So, good weekend to focus on ports if you're looking to get that plate or the pearls needed to build the armor and whatnot. So, I guess save up for the trade good missions throughout the entire month. So, good month to do ports. You guys done your ports?
Yes, oh, yeah. I am completely done. I got the portmaster title and I have everything unlocked. So,
all right. I think I'm a bit away from portmaster still and missing some of the scrolls and whatnot, so have to go back there. And I don't know about you guys, but I kind of stopped doing ports a bit once I got all the armor pieces that I wanted. You guys have anything similar to that?
Yeah, I mean, I got all the stuff that I needed, and I just kind of, being the completionist that I am, and I didn't even have to get it for the cape, but I just kind of wanted to get the portmaster and just get to a point where I would feel okay with neglecting it. As opposed to just, like, you know, quitting after I get my the armor, and it's still sort of a bit unfinished. So
that's fair. And so I just started doing it again now that I'm backish, and I got the plate body after getting 90 smithing, which,
yeah, and
oh my god.
And I mean, that's something that people, you know, you cannot underestimate the use of the tank armor that comes from ports, because it is technically free in terms of GP costs, but I mean, you just put time into it, and in my opinion, it's probably the second best armor in the game next to the tier 90 power armor.
And really, the only effort you have to put into it is pretty much a farming run, an herb run, really. I mean, it's probably even quicker than that.
I mean, it's 5 minutes a day practically at reset if you're, I mean, not too focused on everything else going on in ports. And you don't even need to upgrade all the buildings. You only really need to upgrade the workshop to get the bank and whatnot. But you should definitely do the random events in ports. They're kind of hard to miss. And, I mean, you do those, and you get all kinds of interesting things popping up, and little boosters, ships.
They actually are easier to miss now, though. Like, before, there was an icon on the minimap, and now that's gone, unless I just don't have it enabled anymore. But I have to, like, go find where the little minigame is going to be.
I don't know. And, of course, let's also remember that if you do need motivation to do player-owned ports, there's that great video produced by Jagex called Player-Owned Ports Ahoy.
That was so cringe.
Yeah.
That was so cringe.
You guys didn't like that?
It was hilarious. I will give them that. But it was like, oh my gosh. Did they really just go there?
We did like that when that first came out. We laughed about it and whatnot. And whenever there's someone who wants to know what player-owned ports is, I send them the link to that video.
That'll surely bring them in.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, there's lots of little hidden jokes in there, too, about it. I'll spare everyone from hearing it, because I know we play that a lot on this podcast. But as we, you know, hear Paul's story a lot, too. So we'll just move on from this. Anything else on the kickoff of Mega May before we move on to the tweaks and fixes for the week?
I got nothing.
All right.
Sounds good.
So, some patch notes for this week. Some relating to NXT here, beginning. Entrena can no longer be seen from its nearby coasts, which is good, because, I mean, if you're standing somewhere close to Entrena, you definitely don't want to feel as though you're, you know, a quick swim away from it with NXT.
Yeah.
That's something you can see now.
I'm surprised there wasn't more of that, because there's definitely other instances, actually. I found one a couple days ago I was getting my conquest requirement on Void Knight. And I went down to the bank, and you can clearly see about half of the minigame island from the bank. It's seriously about 5 blocks away from the last boat. It's like, oh, you'd hop on this lander, or you could just swim.
Yeah, and there's one here relating to the Void Knight outpost. Specifically, Apatol can no longer be seen from the Void Knight outpost.
Yeah.
So, they did fix that one, and I mean, I don't know if that includes what you were saying, Dave, but maybe they're meant to be seen like that, as if it's, you know, just a quick little beach lander or something like that. But
right.
The missing Burg Darrat citizens have returned home following the events of the quest River of Blood. This is, of course, what Colton was talking about, the little Easter egg that they put in the quest where the vampires who cross the bridge turn back into humans. They're now back in Burg Darrat this week, so that's good.
I just got a little bit of deja vu. Wasn't that in the patch notes last week? I feel like that was, I remember something about Burg Darrat citizens.
No, we talked about it in the show with Colton, and he said that was the Easter egg that the missing citizens, yeah.
All right, I thought I had read it in the patch notes, I'm sorry. Anyway,
yeah, and I mean, that's perfectly fair. Things do blend together.
Yeah.
The completionist and master quest cape requirement for completing the Myrek Memorial has been extended to include helping Veliaf to move on. Okay. I assume this relates to the memorial there, completing that, but I'm not sure what it means to helping him move on. I think what it is probably referring to is that if you talk to him after the quest, he'll realize that everything is over and then, you know, he can go do whatever he was doing beforehand. So I think you just need to go and talk to the guy after River of Blood.
Yeah, that's all I had to do. So I don't know why you need an extension on that unless you haven't made all the plinths yet, or the statues, rather.
Yeah, so. And I mean, some people did the statues before the quest, too, so that's probably why with that.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you haven't done the quest, I think, a pretty good quest that you guys should definitely go do. Not necessarily for just the rewards, but, you know, the lore behind it definitely caps off a great storyline, as we discussed last week on the show.
Yeah, I would do it within the next week to get that early bird bonus, and then after you do it, you should go listen to last week's episode because we discussed it, and it's pretty cool. So.
Mm-hmm. Update.rspmb.com. Uncovering the secrets of the Haim Alchemy is now a master quest cape requirement, so this is, of course, relating to the rewards after River of Blood and being able to create all the various types of blood essences that are rewarded. The final boss in the quest, River of Blood, has had its combat stats buffed slightly and life points increased too. That was kind of easy at the end, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You think it was too easy?
I don't want to shoot myself in the foot, but considering it was Grandmaster Quest, I think it was a bit of a walk in the park. I mean, going off of Nomad's Elegy, I definitely think it was a step down, maybe two or three steps down. Again, I'm not complaining, but just comparatively, that was my initial thought.
All right, fair enough. Paul, did you do that quest?
I have not done a single quest since coming back.
That's definitely something you should do. You're in for a real treat.
Sweet.
The Lily of the Valley has once again come into bloom and will disappear with the next game update. So, of course, these are the little spring flowers that you can find all around the world. And, well, just signifies that spring is upon us. I guess you could go pick some, but wonder if you can disassemble them for organic parts. I mean, that's something you have to ask with everything here. I mean, people were disassembling monkey corpses and corpses of women. So, I mean,
yeah.
Anyways,
that's morbid.
Yeah, well, I mean, people find things to do in RuneScape, right? So, anything else on the patch notes?
Nope.
All right. Well, that was a quick patch notes this week, and now we're going to move into this week's Treasure Hunter update, which is another item set, the thieving set, Camouflage. So, this is much like the shark outfit and golem outfit for mining. Gives a nice set of boosts towards the thieving skills. I mean, when this first came out, it's kind of kind of annoying when these come out, but once they've done them for many skills, they need to do them for the rest of the skills. So I think at this point we just have to accept these as part of the gameplay. So you guys get any of the pieces yet?
I have not. I actually haven't been using my daily spins or keys, rather, but yeah, I should give it a shot, I guess.
Yeah, because the way it works is for the first 3 days in the weekend, you will get a different set. Yesterday was the head, today is the body, and so on and so forth. And then the last day we'll give all of them. So it does kind of help if you are playing along as you go. But anyways, here's some of the benefits that the camouflage outfit will give you. 5 free daily teleports to thieving locations if you have unlocked them, and these include Priftinus, the Pyramid Plunder, the Consortium, Ledia, the Thieving Guild, and Polnivnich.
The Consortium is very good. That's a very good teleport. I'm trying to think, what is the closest Keldegrim teleport other than teleporting directly to the Consortium?
You could take the minecart.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you have your Varrock set to the GE, you could just do the tunnel, I guess. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of cool, I guess. But anyway.
Yeah, because remember the Consortium and the Dwarf Traders, if you trap all the guards, are tremendous XP, upwards of 700k an hour at 90 plus thieving.
Holy crap.
Yeah, with the Crystal Mask spell and the Traherne Exoskeleton and the Five Finger Discount Aura, all those stacks.
And what does the Shadow Box do or whatever it is?
The Shadow Box?
What's it? God. It was the reward for Nomad's Elegy.
Oh,
that was an invention thing.
Right, that the soul in a box.
That's it.
That, I believe, increases chances of pickpocketing.
Okay.
So you could use that as well, I guess. Though I don't know if it works with the elven thieving system, because that's an entirely different thing. Anyways, Dwarven. Well, I was just speaking differently for Priftinus, but I assume it'll work for Dwarven.
Yeah.
You also get a 5% double chance of pickpocketing. So I mean, okay, so that's. I guess better for loot, but you don't really go to the Chaos Dwarves up there, or the Dwarf Traders rather, to get loot. Here's the good one. 5% chance to avoid being stunned when pickpocketing. If you also have the Traherne Exoskeleton, you'll get its bonuses while wearing a full camouflage outfit too. So these, of course, are going to stack. So, I mean, this, as it is right now, is looking as though it's going to be another one of these overpowered sets, much like the Shark outfit.
Shark's ass.
So,
I think the Shark outfit has been the most overpowered, just in every sense of like what the fishing skill was. And granted, obviously, I got it because I saw that opportunity and I was like, wow, this is. It really was almost game breaking. I mean, what used to be. Oh, you know, having to set up your ability bars and everything to do barbarian fishing, which was the best XP in the game, and you had to, you know, either do sticky keys or, you know, it was really taking advantage of the action bars, like I said, and now it's like, oh, you have this full set, okay, just click here and you eat it and get experience and you don't have to, you literally have to do nothing. It's like, wow, it pretty much just eliminated an entire method of fishing out of the game, so... But I
mean, I guess some
of these do that, and I guess that's the point. But
yeah, and the question always comes up is: should these kind of things be coming in through Treasure Hunter or a different mechanic entirely? And I mean,
right.
I think we're still out on that. But for anyone who is wondering, in case you're needing some motivation to do plagues, and the Traherne Exoskeleton gives you an extra 25% chance to avoid being stunned and damaged while pickpocketing. So add on to this. So I guess that's it. I don't know whether it'd be additive or multiplicative on this, but it's not as powerful as the Traherne Exoskeleton, but it will definitely add on to that.
Mm-hmm.
Wearing camouflage also gives you the same benefits as the Gloves of Silence, provided you own the gloves and meet the requirements to use them. And if you own any Black Ibis outfit pieces, you will get the XP bonus from them while wearing the full Master Thieving outfit. Also, buffs to Pyramid Plunder, including increased chances of finding Ibis pieces in Pyramid Plunder, increased chance to find the Scepter of the Gods in Pyramid Plunder, If you have the Turin exoskeletons, you will also get its bonuses while wearing the full camouflage outfit. Increased chance to pass doors in Pyramid Plunder, and a 5% chance of not being bitten by snakes in Pyramid Plunder as well. So as you can see, this is shaping up to be a very, very powerful set, and there are three different ones that you can combine to get a Master Camouflage outfit, which imparts even more bonuses. So all the regular bonuses, but also adds unlimited daily teleports to the above-mentioned locations, increased chances of finding Saren symbol pieces, this is in Perdinas, auto pickpocket up to a maximum of 10 times in a row before needing to re-click.
Oh, wow. Wow. All right. That might have been the nail in the coffin.
Double pickpocket chance increased to 7%. Chance to avoid being stunned when pickpocketing increased to 7%. Of course, stacks with the Traherne exoskeleton. And if you own the Black Ibis outfit pieces, you will get the percent XP bonuses from them while wearing the full Master Thieving outfit. And, of course, the Snake by Chance reduction is also increased to 7% in Pyramid Plunder. So, yeah. I imagine lots will be spent on keys this weekend.
Is the 10 in a row, is that 10 in a row every time, and does that need to be procced, or is it just, you basically just...
up to a maximum of 10 in a row before needing to re-click, so it just happens when you click.
Wow, so every time you click, you pickpocket 10 times. It's not like, okay, well, this time it happened 4 times, or this happened, you know, this time it happened 5 times, and it's every single time.
Yeah, I mean, I assume it would be stopped if you get stunned.
Right. Okay.
Even then, the chances of getting stunned are reduced, so...
Yeah, you're pretty much at like a 20% chance to get, or probably even less than that, to get stunned, if you have Crystal Mask and all that other stuff, so... Oh, boy.
Yeah, and I mean, I already have 99 thieving, and it's just something that kind of happened. So, I mean...
Whoops, 99.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Oh, damn. I was, you know, just looking for the ability to thieve nest and whatnot, and I got 99 eventually, so it just happened. But it would... I don't know. I wish these set bonuses would have been released in-game through other... mechanics, and
I wish you could get it with like Thaler or something.
Yeah,
just,
there
like,
you go.
It,
you there
know?
You go. And we've talked about numerous other methods before too, whether it be quests, Thaler, and whatnot. So we're not going to go there right now, but it's definitely something that is in the forefront of our mind, and that the rest of us who don't get 5 of them this week will need to wait until Vic comes around so we can trade in all that bonus XP for more.
That's right.
But, I mean, 15 items you need to get on Treasure Hunter in order to get the full Master outfit. And their yellow quality.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, we have a question about this later, so we won't go there right now. But I don't think you can break thieving any more than it's broken right now, given the insane XP that you can get from all the stuff that's in game. So.
So, I mean, with this outfit, you think we're going to be breaking 1 mil an hour?
Oh yeah, definitely. Okay. I mean, you can already break 1 mil an hour if you have bonus XP. So.
Well, right. I mean, is this going to be like one of the first skills that's like 1 mil an hour or maybe more, that's an actual, like, the most popular way to train? Because I know you got construction, you got mahogany tables, but that's really not widely used just due to the expense. I mean, this is, I mean, pretty much literally free, and you're going to be probably be getting upwards of 1 mil an hour without bonus XP. So I'm just curious if this is going to be a sort of another, not necessarily a milestone, but I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I think 1 mil an hour might be pushing it, because in best cases, it's around 740 or 750K that you can get from the dwarves, and this was at 99. So adding on another 7% to that in terms of not being caught, I don't know, maybe push it to 800 or 900, but still, that's quite substantial for a skill.
It really is.
I mean, this is a top-tier training area that I'm speaking about, and that is the dwarf traders at the Consortium, as we mentioned. So, and yes, I mean, well, it's high.
Yeah, I mean, the way I'm looking at it, I guess, too, just from a different perspective, is, I mean, pretty much coming from an impossibly... I mean, you could not AFK this skill. It was completely attention-driven, like blackjacking bandits in the desert, or Menophyte thugs, rather. You know, it was very click-intensive for mediocre XP. Same with Pyramid Plunder. I mean, those were the top two ways to train. And, you know, say 5-6 years later, here we are, and you pretty much click once, you know, maybe click 10 times every minute, and you're just blowing those rates out of the water, which is the natural power creep of the game. But
yeah,
I
mean, there's other things as well, like assuming you're not level 90 and you have the Crystal Mask spell from Prif, paladins also work as a good option for something to look at in terms of fast thieving XP. So there is a lot of fast AFKable thieving now, it seems.
AFK escape.
Yeah, that's pretty much where we've headed over the past number of years, and I don't see any change coming, because obviously people are going to want this outfit. And, I mean, they also include, conveniently, a vine of the camouflage outfit, and it does kind of make your player look translucent and appear almost ghost-like. So there's that to it as well, the look factor. But it is what it is, and we'll see who manages to get one of these. I'm hoping for at least one of the sets this weekend. We'll have to wait and see. And as a reminder, they are tradable between other players.
You have to trade for another piece, though?
Yeah, do. You can't trade, like, GP and whatnot.
Yeah, it's exactly like the shark outfit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can give you a hat and a plate and off you go kind of thing. But
right.
All right, so enough of that, and let's talk about something that's perhaps a little bit more interesting, shall we?
We shall.
So, Rune Labs is open for ideas for 2017. They're using Rune Labs in kind of the same way that they did previously. So, and I quote, 2016's well underway, but we've been thinking about the big updates that'll define next year. That's why we've opened Rune Labs up for your ideas for 2017. We're looking for your boldest, craziest, and most game-changing ideas, the sort that'll be pivotal in the 2017 release cycle. Rather than running a poll, we'll be hand-picking the very best ideas we receive. These ideas will then be added to the RuneScape 2017 survey, which is coming at the end of May. This is your chance to get your ideas into RuneScape to make a real difference to the game you love and have a hand in shaping 2017. So, you guys have any ideas off the bat?
Not right off the top of my head, but I'll have to go to the drawing board and see if I can't drum something up. But yeah, it's nice to see Rune Labs come back. I was hoping it wasn't sort of a dead thing that was like a fun idea, because they didn't have much, you know, ideas for themselves, so they kind of just ask us. But it's nice to see it come back, and it's nice that we're getting I don't want to call it feedback, but we're sort of getting the notion. And they're keeping us updated that, you know, we're already looking into 2017, and they're starting early. So hopefully that means less pushbacks, and, you know, they can sort of get their you-know-what together quicker. So.
Right. And, I mean, as we saw with the last time Rune Labs was used for the tail half part of the big update of 2016, which turned out to be the Eastern Lands, it's a lot better when, you know, an idea is put out there for Rune Labs, and then rather than the whole top five going to pull, Jagex ultimately just comes in and uses it as an idea incubator better than, I mean, coming out with things like Elven waterfall fishing, for God's sakes. So that's definitely positive. And, you know, this is definitely a time where we can look and see what does RuneScape need and what can definitely change the way the game's going forward. And I hope that's what people are going to do with this. So I am hopeful going forward with this. And so much so that I would like to share the idea that we at RSBB Update are going to be getting behind. So this is something that was first pulled in 2013 by Jagex. It was pulled, and it didn't exactly work because, well, we didn't have the in-game polling system, and I feel that it wasn't explained properly by Jagex as to what would happen. So, as a result, I am getting behind and have created the idea of Prestige Mode for RuneScape skills. So, I'm going to read this idea out to you as it's posted in the Rune Labs thread right now. So once long ago, it was possible to raise your skills in RuneScape with the hope of appearing at the top of the high scores tables. Now these high scores tables are occupied by the maximum amount of XP, which is 200 million. New players who wish to chase the dream of appearing on the first page have no hope of gaining this achievement. There are also players who enjoy certain skills and aspects of the game. Combat, Slayer are a good example, and they would love to start these fresh. Currently, the only way of doing this is to start a new RuneScape account and restart everything from the beginning, and this is not feasible for most people due to monetary cost or the social investment that they have with their character. And that leads us to the solution, which is, of course, Prestige Mode. So, Prestige Mode would allow a player to reset a skill to level 1 after achieving level 99 or 120 in Dungeoneering or Invention, and upon resetting to level 1, the experience is set to 0, and the skill's prestige count is increased by 1. Upon resetting, the player will no longer have the ability to use their old skill level, i.e. level 99, to make items, do quests, or wear the skill's cape of accomplishment. The player will then proceed to level up as they normally do, with one exception. After a skill has been reset to level 1 with prestige, the player will incur a handicap. Each time prestige mode is activated, the amount of XP required to reach level 99 will double. This will happen 15 times for standard skills and 5 times for elite skills. Prestige 15 will require 195,516,465 experience to reach 99 for a standard skill at Prestige 15, and 180,367,555 to reach 99 for an elite skill at Prestige 5. In addition, bonus experience cannot be used in Prestige mode. High score tables will be sorted by the prestige level, followed by the current experience in that skill. A player with prestige 4 and 1 million experience will appear higher than someone who has prestige 1 and 20 million experience. A legacy high score table will be maintained that tracks experience gains to 200 million XP, as we have now, though the prestige tables will be default. And that's the idea for prestige mode in RuneScape for 2017. This is an idea that I have been talking to people about, and there seems to be some consensus around the RSBNB community that this would be a good thing, so I thought we would get behind this. So I am asking you guys to head on over to Rune Labs and support this idea. We currently got 7 supporters after just posting it and not really doing much promotion on it at all. So you can find that at bit.ly/rsprestige2016, all one word. So what do you guys think?
I think it's explained much better than what Jagex came out and tried to explain it as, because what they explained it as at the time really turned me off and actually sort of struck a nerve with me, and I instantly just preached against it and all that. I really like this outlook, and I think, and I also hope, that everyone that reads this and hears about it, and even Jagex themselves, takes it seriously, because, you know, you even calculated out, you know, exactly how much it would take for 99, or for 99 and Prestige 15, and then 5 on Elite Skills, and, you know, from what it looks like, we're still maintaining that, you know, under 200 mil cap, but yeah. you're milking as much as you can right. out of that, which is what I like.
And see, the thing is that the Prestige 15 and Prestige 5 is there because Jagex has said previously they have no intent of changing the 200 million max XP cap. So the logic behind it is that, yeah, you can still continue to prestige on past Prestige 15 and Prestige 5 for elite skills, but it would stay at this 195 mil mark to reach level 99 and 180 mil mark to achieve 99 in the elite skill.
Right.
So we do have that going for us here.
Not sure what it solves, though, because then you're just going to race towards level 15 or 15 prestige and 195 million XP. Right?
But the thing is that at Prestige 15, you can continue going on and say you're going to reset again and get that same 195 million XP, and your Prestige counter will continue to go up. So,
but it just won't increase. Like, you can have higher than 15 Prestige, but you won't require more than 195 mil to get to 99 again. You'll be capped at that, but you can keep prestiging as many times as you want.
Yeah, like you could be, say, prestige 30 in your cooking skill, and you would still need 195 million XP to get to level 99 in that skill.
So what's the difference between this and just having a higher experience overall?
Well, the difference between this and having a higher experience overall is that you have a hard cap right now on the high score XP tables at 200 million XP. And the result of this is that it is near impossible for someone to even crack into the top, I don't know, 10 pages on even the least prestige of these skills. Because as it stands right now, 7,073 people have 200 million Dungeoneering XP, and there's 21 people per page, or at least there used to be. I think it might be 50 now. There are 1962 people with 200 million Thieving XP, 1469 with 200 million Constitution XP, 1307 with 200 million Magic XP, 1190 with 200 million Defense XP. I could go on, but these numbers here explain why the tables at the top are effectively locked, and by bringing in prestige mode, we solve this problem. Granted, yes, there are people who are going to complain that, oh, I don't want to get off my butt and do more thieving. But if you like the skill enough and you want to maintain a rank on the new high scores tables, you will do that. And as I said, there will be legacy tables maintained that, you know, keep tracking towards 200 million so that this whole old system of appearing as though, you know, we have all these pages locked in of people of 200 million XP. Yes, that'll still be around, but mainly just to show what the entire picture of that skill is like, whereas bringing in the prestige high score table will enable a more active climb towards a top of an XP table.
Cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, I honestly feel that it was horribly explained the first time around. The negative side of it really caught fire, and we didn't have a well thought out polling system to make it happen. Whereas I think now that we can explain it better, and we have a polling system, and we can approach it from a positive light, I think we can make this happen. Also, we need to look at the reality with the game currently is that in 2013, we didn't have all the fast training methods that we do now. Like we were just talking about, you can probably get 99 thieving in a week if you want to, or less.
Insane.
So, and if you really put your nose to it, you could probably get 200 mil in a month if you wanted
That's
to.
That's crazy.
Exactly. So that is why I think the old XP table doesn't work and why something like this needs to be looked at. And, I mean, the numbers are, and mechanics are, of course, you know, up for debate, too, because Jagex could come in and say, okay, we want Prestige 15 to be the maximum, or maybe we want the amount of XP in the elite skills to go off of level 120 rather than level 99. So there is room for wiggling on all of this, of course. So, it all comes down to whether or not the players want to see this. And if it does, then we can put it on the survey for the end of the year, and then we'll take it from there. So I'm asking you guys, if you guys find this idea interesting and you find it appealing to you, then definitely support it here. Tell your friends about it. And of course, if we keep this up, we might just get on the survey at the end of the month, and then we'll see what happens from there.
Definitely.
So yeah, cool. let's all give it a support.
You've got 8 supporters now.
Thank you.
Whole one more.
Is that including both of you?
Yes.
I was 8th, yeah.
Do you support it yet, Dave?
Oh, I did, yes.
All right. So, and I mean, I just came out with this before we started recording, and I do have lots more outreach planned. So you'll be hearing much more about this in the weeks to come.
Sweet, God.
Okie dokie. So that's prestige mode. Anything else on Rune Labs before we talk about what's coming for the rest of May?
No, sir.
Nope.
So May, obviously Mega May is the big story, but we'll also be seeing Kindred Spirits, the next part in Sliskay's Countdown, in which we head on over to the Barrows and meet the Barrows sister that was unveiled at RuneFest. How do you guys feel about that, a Barrows sister?
I don't have anything against it. I think they need to calm down because pretty soon we're going to have the Barrows Brady Bunch and we're going to have like 18 people.
you know, it's just less of a sausage fest. It's good.
Right, exactly. You got to add that in. No, I mean, it's fine. If they make it another Accursay stupid, I mean, honestly, they should have learned their lesson with Accursay and the fact that pretty much no one kills him because it's just, it's obviously it's not required and it's just, you can't really be asked to do it. I know I can't. Every time I do Barrows, I always skip Accursay because I don't want to take up, you know, 4 or 5 more inventory spots and, you know, have to switch everything out for one fight. It's
and
rather
you
annoying.
Know, hybrid armor and the Sun Spear from last week's quest can probably go a long way to solving that.
Yes, it can, but I don't know. I'm interested to see how it goes. I'll definitely check it out, though, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they say there's plenty of surprises along the way, not least the long-awaited reveal of the Barrow Sister. Okay, so we know that much. What other surprises could there be? I mean, obviously this is related to Sliskay himself because he created the Barrow's family there.
Right.
So any ideas what we could see for a surprise?
It would be interesting to see Grigorvik somehow tied in. Because I know that was sort of in the same area. I'm not much of a lore hound, as all of you know. But, yeah, I think that would be kind of cool if they somehow tie that in with God Wars 2. Not really concrete, but, you know, maybe just like a little, oh, that's kind of interesting type of thing. But I'm not really sure what they could mean by a surprise.
Right. Mm-hmm. One thing I was wondering, and I'm not sure if this is even possible, would it be to would we be able to reverse the spell that Sliskay cast on the Barrows brothers in such a way that maybe we could see that reversed in the final quest, perhaps, and then fight alongside them as a method, maybe, and then that would change the way the Barrows fight works and maybe make the current Barrows fight a little bit higher level.
That would be interesting.
Though, yeah. I mean, they do say here a new Barrows fight is on offer, so we'll have to see what happens with this at the end of this quest. It includes a new armor and a weapon with a unique set bonus, so it could just be that might be enough to update the Barrows combat encounter, because as you guys will probably remember, Barrows was one of the really early ones to come out in terms of combat.
Mm-hmm. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, you guys remember when the Guthan Spear was worth like 10 million or 12 million GP?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Those were the days. You get one of those and you're like, yeah! And now it's like, no one even does it.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it like a couple hundred K probably? I don't even know.
I don't know. I'm not going to look it up. but also this month, invention tech trees, 10 new technologies this month to the invention skill, bringing Goblin and Dwarf deck to the workbench, including 2 new explosive cannon variants. Also some changes to the way the tech trees work, providing new task-related gameplay with invention to give you more focus as you train the skills. You know what this immediately reminded me of?
What's that?
Slayer, a Slayer-type mechanic except for skilling.
Yeah, I'm behind it. I like it. I think it's pretty cool. I'm interested to see how it works.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what we get for the new pieces of technology and whether or not this is the time when the sprinkler comes out, because that's something I've definitely been wanting for the farming side of things.
That would be very nice. I'm ready to start seeing more skilling items for invention, and we've been getting those slowly trickling down, so hopefully this is a breakout.
Yeah, and I mean, there's lots of people who have already got level 99 and 120 invention, as we know. But providing you with new task-related gameplay with an invention, giving you more focus as you train the skill. So part of me thinks that this is for the people like myself who are sourcing everything themselves and have not got 99 yet. Because I know you said last week, Dave, that you haven't touched invention since you got 120.
Correct.
So, Paul, have you had a look at that since you've been back?
Invention?
Yeah.
Not yet. I still don't have 80... Divination, so haven't even started.
Oh, okay, well, you should definitely get on that. It's certainly an interesting skill to look at.
Yep, doing the divination whenever I get the, the daily.
The daily challenge.
Not the daily challenge. The
caches.
Not even the caches. Oh crap! I can't even think of the name. The divine location things.
Oh, okay.
Whenever someone pops one of those up, I get one of that. Otherwise, I haven't trained.
Well, that doesn't train divination, though. That just trains that certain skill.
No, it trains divination. The one that the...
Oh, right. The divine fulcrum. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. You know, just a PSA out there to anyone who is looking to train divination up, it's excellent money for the energy still. And you, of course, can do the daily divine location, like Paul said, and Guthixian caches a number of times per day.
Simulcrum. Divine Simulcrum. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right.
Neat.
Let's see. Incandescent energy is currently going for 278. On the GE, looks like it's gone down a bit, but it's still definitely up there compared to when Invention first came out. It was 157, so it's still a good way to train if you're past level 95, and you can probably bring lots of money in with that because that's what everyone charges their weapons off of now. So that's probably one of the best ways to make money by skill in these days, I think.
Yes, sir.
And they are bringing back Duel Anywhere. So basically, you're going to be able to have fun duels anywhere you like. No stakes, just
neat,
fun.
Neat little update.
Yeah, it's evidently just for fun, and I don't know if this would revive anything PvP-wise, because I know there are a lot of PvPers out there who, like staking, but they won't stake unless they can stake something that is worthwhile to it. So, obviously that's still going to happen in the duel arena, but if they had staking everywhere that let you stake items and GP, you think that would draw more of a crowd than if it was just fun dueling?
Yeah, but the duel arena would be dead content instantly. That's the thing.
Very true. And it's important to remember that last time there was a duel anywhere and, PvP worlds and the whole thing, there was no duel arena, so...
Right.
And I should mention this to everyone who is on the boss pet hunt before we move on. And finally, we've got something in mind for all of you who have worked hard and earned those elusive bot pets. I hope you enjoy it and stay tuned for more. And if you look at the behind-the-scenes video that was published this month at the tail end, you'll see exactly what this is referring to. And it couldn't be more obvious than what it is. You see a bunch of pack yaks turn into the boss pets. So it's evident that they're going to be letting players use the boss pet overrides as summoning familiar overrides.
I like it. Even though I really don't have any, I still surprised that hasn't, it's taken them this long. So.
Yeah, and lots of people wanted this, and it seems like a relatively simple thing to do in terms of making overrides, so I don't know, maybe it was just put on the back burner.
Yeah.
So, we'll have to wait and see how it pans out, but I know lots of people will be happy about that. But that is it for RS content this week, unless you guys have anything else you'd like to mention.
Yeah, I don't believe so.
Nope. All set.
Well, on to questions we go. Remember to look up Prestige Mode. bit.ly/RSPrestige2016. First one is from Thieves. We'll get Paul to read that.
Alrighty. Hey guys, so this month my favorite skill thieving will be getting something called the Camouflage Outfit, which seems like a thieving version of Treasure Hunter outfits such as the Fury Shark, Infinity Ethereal, and Magic Golem. Considering you basically have to buy keys to complete the outfit, for the first time ever I'm contemplating buying keys with IRL money. So my question is, if one of the Treasure Hunter outfits was coming out for you, for your favorite skills, would you be willing to pay for it? Cheers, fellas. Thieves. What about you, Shane? Would you pay for your favorite outfit for farming?
No, I wouldn't. I would not. I would, if I really, really needed this, it would go through bonds and GP. I think that for me personally, doing something like this where it is required or, you know, would drastically improve the way the game is played, I don't think it would bring the same sense to it if I used real-world money on it compared to if I was to use in-game earned bonds. So, no, I would not.
Fair enough.
I can give you the long answer and the short answer. Short answer is yes, I would. Long answer is it depends on the skill and it depends on what it does. And as we've seen, these outfits are pretty OP. I will disclose that I did spend real-world money to get the Fury Shark. This was mainly because this was the first one that really caught my eye as being game-changing. The Golem outfit, you know, it gave a bonus here and there or whatever, but it really didn't change the core of the skill at the higher levels. Fury Shark, you know, basically, you know, the best XP in the game at the time was the Barbarian Fishing. And, you know, it was very click intensive. You had to drop and cut and do all that stuff. And this pretty much made it completely FKable. And I, you know, they really pushed the mindset of, you know, this is only going to be available this weekend. So I bit, pun intended. And I got that. But it was mostly because it was more of a, you know, I don't want to be left behind with, you know, everybody's going to have this outfit. Everybody's going to have these huge rates. And, you know, I really just didn't want to be left behind, especially with something that seems so substantial when they announced this. You know, if they release something for runecrafting, which is one of my favorite skills, you know, I might, but I might not have any use for it. It really depends on, you know, what the bonuses are. Divination is one of my other favorite skills, and I do have the, I do have that outfit, but I actually got that with the keys I already had from all the quests that I, you know, had completed. So I had like 100+ keys, so I just used it on that weekend, and I got them. So, but yeah, I mean, it really just depends on what is offered and what the skill is. But the short answer is yes, I would definitely consider it, provided the storm is perfect. So.
Yeah, and I mean the shark outfit looks hilarious too. So I mean I can understand I can understand why you kind of did that. Wasn't there a performance at a Super Bowl once with dancing sharks?
Mm-hmm.
So yes, there was. I mean I want someone with those shark outfits to reenact that because
that would be hilarious.
Because those shark outfits were on YouTube because they were out of sync.
Yes, they were.
So, what about you, Paul?
Probably not. I just don't think I would personally get enough of a benefit, but I can definitely see the appeal. If there was one skill that you super liked and you could actually gain a benefit, I don't know. If there's a skill that you can actually get a lot of money through and putting $10 worth of money in to get some bonds to get whatever it is and get a lot more money in game to kind of pay it off, or the fun factor would go up for you, then yeah, $10 I guess wouldn't be the worst, or whatever it ends up being.
Yeah, I think you mentioned something also very important there. If it increases the fun factor for you, then it's definitely something that you should look into doing.
Definitely. I mean, you gotta kind of justify things, and if you can look at spending $10 or $20 or $50, whatever it may be, as just increasing your fun in a game that you play a lot, then it's really not that bad of an investment.
Yeah, and I mean, there's other things too, and like some people equate Treasure Hunter to gambling, but the thing is that Treasure Hunter isn't gambling because you're guaranteed to get something out of Treasure Hunter. I mean, it might seem useless, but you do get something. You're not throwing money away, and you're supporting the game you like rather than funding government coffers with gambling.
And, you know, a different perspective is, I mean, you can really view, since RuneScape doesn't have expansions per se like WoW or anything, you can see these little Treasure Hunter promotions as just being like little DLC. I mean, you would buy, you know, DLC for Last of Us if it came out, you know, you would buy DLC for you know, GTA 5 if it came out, you would buy like little additions to the game Obviously, it's going to be game-changing and it's going to give you an edge, but you're paying for it. So, I mean, coming from – and this is just a discussion on microtransactions as a whole, and I'm not going to get too far into it, but you can really just view it as DLC. I mean, you know, you can call it pay to win, but when it all comes down to it, the market is moving in that direction. And, you know, if it increases the fun factor, why wouldn't you spend money on something that you enjoy? So
yeah, wholly agree with you there, and we haven't actually seen pay to win yet, and that's actually what the next question deals with. So if you guys are ready to move on, we'll talk about that.
Let's do it.
All right, so our next one is a discussion topic from Parnassius. He says, "Hey guys, I have a discussion topic for you this week. Well, I don't usually promote YouTube videos. One came out last week that I found really disturbing. This person has a series where he simply buys treasure hunter keys on promotion and uses them to buy all his skills. He has almost a maxed account with only 2 days of actual in-game time. While I don't really care one way or another about microtransactions, this video shows the player spending $4,400 on keys on a weekend simply to buy a maxed account, without any actual gameplay involved. To me, this sends the wrong message to players, especially those who may have little self-control, and really promotes spending real-life cash that some people may not have in order to advance. Most disturbing was the fact that on the top 130 million odd XP he gained, he also won 5 drops of the 200 million GP, thus giving the account over a billion in gold. Love to hear what you guys think on this, and is it really too much to be promoting by a YouTuber with such high visibility among the RS community? Keep up the great work, and thanks again for the podcast from Parnassius." So, we're not going to promote this video or link to it. I watched the video, and it has over 230,000 views on it. It doesn't need more. And of that, there's, for some reason, 3,000 plus likes on that video, which is also weird. I guess people like seeing people spend money. It got to the point where he was spending money in the video that Jagex locked him out because they thought he was spending fraudulently because he spent so much. So there are limits in place for how much
how much was it?
He spent $4,400.
No. How much was it before they locked him out?
I don't know. He didn't say. It was probably about at the halfway point. So, I mean.
So you have to spend about $2,000 before they lock your account for fraudulent activity? I mean, that's
I mean, I don't know exactly where it was, but that was halfway on the video. So. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what people actually think of this, but evidently, I mean, this can happen, and this is also why, with the prestige discussion, I said no bonus XP on prestige modes, which, I mean, I think is fair, but I honestly think that the smoldering lamps that this was done with is probably the worst part of Treasure Hunter that there actually is. And the fact that this is gaining so much traction, I hope that it doesn't encourage other people to do it. I would not do that. And, I mean, honestly, if you spend that kind of money, why are you doing that? You better have that YouTube video better be generating the income for you to do that, because that seems like an unjustifiable expense for a video game.
Yeah, that's, I mean, what I was saying,
4 times the price of a computer.
Right. Yeah, I mean, in the previous question, you know, obviously there's a line. You know, I mean, should you spend $200 on something because if it increases the fun factor? I wouldn't condone it, and I wouldn't do it. But I mean, again, there's a line between dropping $20 on a game you like every couple months as opposed to spending 2 months' paycheck, you know, on a game for completely just ludicrous reasons. But yeah, I mean, this is, I am not condoning this at all, and it kind of irritates me because it's really just sort of bringing out the absolute complete negatives in microtransactions when I don't believe that's the case. They do have their place, and, you know, everybody's going to have an extreme to the story, and sadly enough, this video has gotten more traction than it deserves. So
yeah, and I mean, I personally think that the whole reason this was done on video was indeed to generate this traffic. So
yeah. How long ago was the video put up?
It was like 4 days ago, 4 or 5 days ago.
I don't know. I don't know what the current generation for views are, but that's nowhere even close to generating that kind of money.
No, but still.
That's still...
Just the popularity.
Yeah, yep. and I mean, that's even worse because you're creating this sense in the community that you have a certain amount spent, and then you're going to... That's how much a RuneScape character is worth, per se. And it just creates something artificial that shouldn't necessarily need to be put onto an RS character, I think. So, I mean, it is definitely disgusting. And I don't know what Jagex thinks of this, if they condone people spending that much. I mean, obviously the bookies like it. But when it comes down to it, it is money going into Jagex's coffers. So they are happy on that front. But the question is, are they morally happy with that many people or that much XP being generated just out of smoldering lamps?
Well, I don't know. So, I don't have the kind of money where I'd want to spend $4,400 on a character. But if I had that kind of disposable income and I really didn't care, I guess. I mean, I can't justify that at all in my brain, but... If I was making, you know, six figures and I didn't have anything else to buy, sure, made me happy. It's just money, right?
Okay.
It's probably just it's a different world for the guy who did it. I can't wrap my mind around it, but...
Yeah, neither can I. Hence why I was speechless when you said that.
Probably so. What? I don't make that kind of money, but if I did... And I wanted to spend $4,400 on something. What's to say it can't be a character in a game?
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, I guess that is just where we're going with virtual goods. So I don't know. It's a depressing question. So, but I think we definitely don't agree with this volume. So I think we'll end it right there. And Parnassius says, keep up the great work, and thanks again for the podcast. All righty, we got another discussion question, a long one here from Wiley, and I'll give it a read. Hey guys, Wiley again. Going to attempt to give you a long discussion again, so please don't hate me for it. Oh no, we don't hate that. It just adds to the show. So back in November or December, you guys discussed the new Defenders and your thoughts on them. I'd like to ask a couple of questions about your opinions and offer my own theories on them. To start off, I love Defenders and I am a slow-paced, sustain-oriented combat player, so I have a bias for Defenders as they allow me to last much longer on Slayer and low-level boss trips without using too much food. Fair enough. I was wondering if your opinions about Defenders have changed at all since the original podcast. I can see a niche role they play for people like me or the PvP players, the way they have to be played in my eyes, with the focus on Barricade instead of Rejuvenate. I can see how the entry and maintenance cost for tier 90s is very daunting for most players, but I feel like there might be a unique role they could play somewhere. If your opinions about them hasn't changed since their release, what sort of buffs do you think they would need in order to become relevant? Increased accuracy or damage reduction, increase in effectiveness to 62.5 or 75%, or somehow a massive reduction in price. Do you think a buff that you select would be warranted without being overpowered? Do you think the update to make them augmentable will come through, or will it be one of those promised updates that Jagex forgets about? Also, do you think that the Flame Burst Defender from Dungeoneering, only functioning as an offhanded weapon and not a defender, is intentional or a bug? Thanks for the podcast, and remember to click those cabbages as the end is near, 5 years away. All right, so obviously you guys weren't here back in November when we discussed Defenders and Slayer Month. So what do you guys think about the new Defenders past Dragon? Barrows, Nex, and of course Drygor.
Cool to know they exist now. That's news to me.
Yeah, see, you're just learning everything. Maybe it's time for another YouTube series video that made Reed covers ears every week last year.
That would be Reed.
But what about you, Dave?
It was refreshing to hear whenever they released them. I can admittedly say that I have not acquired any of them yet. Never really used a Defender in EOC. Defender was kind of Legacy's way of dual wielding, in a sense. Yeah, it gave you that offensive bonus, but still keeping your... It was kind of a mid-range deal. And to be completely honest, I'm not a very tanky style combat player. When I slay, I just try to burst down as much as I can and just move on. Probably not the most economical way to go about it. So I can't really weigh in on the fact of all the defensive abilities and whatnot, since that's really not my focus. But I like the fact that they came out. I'm kind of surprised that they haven't taken off as much as I thought they would. I figured that would become potentially a new best-in-slot item. I mean, even tanks anymore. You know, I was at Raids a couple weeks ago, and, you know, everybody was still just using a throwaway shield just to get off their, you know, their shield abilities and whatnot, and they really, you know, haven't incorporated it so much into the higher level gameplay like I thought it, you know, I thought they would. You know, you're going to have a Drygore defender, you know, people are getting them, but they're really not being put into use. And I'm not really sure why, again, because that's not really my playstyle. But it was just nice to see him bring something past Dragon. It's just a shame that I feel like they didn't really take off as much as I thought they would.
Yeah, and I think you basically described why they didn't take off, and that's mainly because people just prefer to use the dual wielding because that gives them the most DPS that they can get when they're doing combat. And in today's era of RuneScape, you're not going to offer a weapon or training method that doesn't min-max enabling XP and expect it to be around that long. And I totally agree with what Wiley says here, is that for someone who wants a tanky form of the playstyle for combat, then it's definitely a great option to have available, because it allows you to spend less on food, which is excellent. So I agree with that. And I mean, I don't know if they need a buff to make them more worthwhile. Only Jagex has the metrics to decide on that. But I think your idea of going around 75% of the value of an offhand weapon would probably be a good place to start, because as it stands right now, for anyone who doesn't remember, offhand weapons give you 50% the damage of a main hand, and therefore defenders give you 50% the damage of an offhand. So he's suggesting that maybe taking it up to 62.5% or 75% of an offhand. Maybe a bit of a price reduction as well, and then that might be an interesting way of going about it. But as it stands right now, I'm not much of a combat person, so I think the price is probably just fine where it is. So, I mean, maybe a year in, buffing the effectiveness might be the best thing to do. But as it stands right now, my opinion is pretty much the same, that I just personally prefer to use the dual-wielding option out there for doing Slayer. And I think a way to bring defenders to the forefront would ultimately be to have more creatures out there that require defensive abilities.
Mm-hmm.
Because, obviously, you're going to want to use a defender if you're not using shield. Shield gives you zero damage. Defender gives you at least some. So,
that's right.
As I can think right now, there's really nothing that requires you to use defensive abilities in game aside from maybe a few quest NPCs and higher level bossing encounters, but you do bring a tank for that case. So, and augmentable defenders, I think that would be great as well. I hope Jagex does not forget about them.
Say that again? Oh, augmentable defense. Yeah.
Yeah. And flame burst defenders from Dungeoneering. I honestly had no idea those exist. I don't Dungeoneer.
I didn't know. I did not know they existed either.
Okay, well, thank you, Wiley, for informing us. We probably should do more Dungeoneering, but I just can't bring myself to do that.
Yeah.
Anyways, anything else on that one?
I think that pretty much sums it up.
All right. So if you want to send questions or discussion topics in, you can email questions@rsbnb.com. We can take the text ones there, or you can include an audio file for voice. You can also call or text to 571-57BNB, which is 571-572-2632, or DM them to @rsbnb on Twitter. That's how you can get us your questions. And, of course, we like audio questions, so please do attach those audio files or give us a call.
Indeed.
Okay, so on to tech news. Well, last year in the fall, once again, we talked about something called YouTube Red. Now, YouTube is supposedly working on something called YouTube Unplugged for release in 2017. It's YouTube's own paid subscription service that is going to offer the effectiveness of cable TV channels that are streamed over the internet. They're dealing with NBC Universal, Viacom, Fox, and CBS, of course. So the idea is that YouTube would be offering TV shows through their service.
Well, that's the big guys. That's what you need to have on board to make it work.
Yeah.
Makes me wonder if they're going to ditch Hulu or something.
YouTube and Hulu are related?
No. But Comcast,
okay.
All these things have already invested in Hulu, so why? Except for CBS, I think. This competes directly against Hulu.
Yeah, and
but, you know, hedge your bets, I guess.
And I mean, Google definitely has the ability to make something like this work while offering it and potentially taking a loss on it, you know, given just how much revenue Google pulls in through ad services and whatnot, plus a subscription service here. So it's not as though it's a cost issue. It's just a matter of getting the people on board with licensing. And, you know, Apple's also been rumored to be doing this kind of thing since way back, but of course it's never materialized. So it'd be really a game changer, I think, if YouTube and Google could get into this and, you know, beat Apple to the punch, so to speak. Because Apple disrupted the music industry, so if Google can do this to the TV industry, then I think that is
touché.
A game changer. Because just look at the difference between the music industry before and after Apple got into it. And now imagine what TV would look like after Google and YouTube get into distributing and what that does to cable providers.
I wonder if this means that if Comcast is, through NBC Universal, I wonder if Comcast is raising their caps because of this to help hedge their bets against it being useful.
I don't know. And I mean, if they are doing that, the question is, if they don't raise the caps, what happens?
They just raised it from, well, you know, it was not everywhere, but in the places that it existed, it was 300 gigs, and they just announced that they're, as of September or something, are going to raise it to a terabyte, which I use maybe half, well, at least in our old place with four people, we went through about half a terabyte a month very consistently.
That's
I don't
not
know
bad.
How much. I mean, I don't like Comcast, but I must say my service has been great, and I get crazy awesome speeds. And I've never had a problem, but
yeah,
the caps kind of stink. Even though I never really, you know, am impacted by them.
Another thing that popped into my mind with this is what happens with the supposed net neutrality stuff.
Yeah, because they I could see if they have an investment in this, treating it special.
Yep, and I mean that passed, but there's still questions that remain about that and whether or not that was the right way of doing it. So it's going to be a good test for net neutrality laws too if something like this goes in. And you just have to look at what Google is doing, from Project Fi for cell service to Google Fiber, and then this kind of thing for TV access. So I don't know, it could change the landscape, but what do you think, Dave?
I think you guys nailed it on the head.
Okay.
I really don't have anything else. I mean, it really is all just coming down to, it seems like everyone is really just shot out of the gate with this whole subscription service and TV and all these sort of gaming and online companies shifting their focus. You know, when Xbox One was first released, it was sort of marketed as the all-in-one entertainment console, you know, being able to plug your TV in and into the back of it and being able to, you know, basically
That's
watch
a great
TV
feature.
Yeah, watch your TV through your Xbox and stuff. And you know, with the whole console war, everybody was like, oh well, you know, I'll have my Xbox so I can watch TV, and then I'll have my PS4 to play games and stuff. And that kind of sort of went away with Xbox. They really went towards the gaming side once Phil Spencer kind of took reins. and you know, really went gaming. And now, as we see, you know, PlayStation, you know, they're really marketing the, you know, PlayStation TV and PlayStation View, or, you know, whatever it is. I can't remember what it's called. You know, offering network, you know, cable, not necessarily your Netflix stuff, but it's, you know, stuff you would get through your Comcast or your Charter, you know, AT&T, whatever, you know, actual service that you have. So, you know, it's, you know, wondering if all of this is going to sort of fade out with the cable companies, and it's really just going to move towards towards the digital stuff. But it seems like over the past at least 5 years, our media has become very subscription based, and I find that very interesting.
Yeah, and speaking of subscription, they're talking about $35 a month for the base package, and then, I mean, they would add on like that would be the core of it, and then of course you could add on the comedy channels and the comedy bundle, for example, they say. So, I mean, this is all up in the air still, but the thing is, I think if you ask anyone who has standard cable today and you're looking for something to just watch on TV, you're not watching one of the shows that, you know, you line up to watch. You're just looking for something to watch because you just want to watch something. There is nothing on TV ever that is interesting. So maybe this would go a ways to helping that.
Mm-hmm.
One final thing on this. YouTube will have 185 million unique viewers by 2018, and that's 67% of all internet users. So, yeah.
That's lofty.
You think they're not going to get there?
I don't know. I don't know what they are at now.
Let's see, 2016, they are targeting around 178 web app viewers per minute, and 63% of the internet users, according to the image here provided in the news story.
Then it'll go from 63 to...
67, so a 4% increase.
Oh, that's not... Really?
Yeah,
it's... Okay, wow, that's...
That's 2 years.
That's all... Holy crap, they have two-thirds of the internet? That's insane. I was thinking it would be much less than that.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, then net neutrality is probably already something to be that could be acted upon, but even more so once all these cable companies get involved with it.
Jeez.
All right. Well, obviously, this won't be available for us in Canada or anywhere else until 2025, so let's talk about Windows 10. So Windows 10, as they say, is... apparently approaching the end of its near free upgrade cycle. Paul, you think they'll keep it free past end of July?
I always thought they would, but at least the last I had heard from Windows Weekly is that they're not expecting it to go past that, which is interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they need to say that to get people upgrading, and I honestly think that it is a reason for you to upgrade, because when do you get a free operating system that's going to last you the life of your device?
I agree.
Unless you use Linux or OS X. It's never happened.
So it's never happened on Windows. Nope.
Exactly. But anyways, Windows 10 has passed more than 300 million active devices, and that was a number released this past week, whereas at the end of March, they had hit 270 million active users. So 30 million increase in just over a month.
And this is towards the end of the upgrade, like the free upgrade cycle. That's pretty good growth.
Yeah, and I mean, I would hope that this is a case of people realizing that, you know, it's going to be an easy upgrade and it's going to be relatively simple to do, that we might as well just do it, right?
I've got it on all of my systems. And have it on most of my family systems, except for one grandmother who has XP still.
Well, that's an entirely different story. You can't really upgrade from XP to 10. So
I can't upgrade her from anything to anything else, so I gave up.
Yeah. And Microsoft's original goal was to have 1 billion Windows 10 users within the first 2 to 3 years. So if they're going for 3 years, they will hit that at the current rate. So, I mean... the fact that they say within 2 to 3 years definitely shows that people are going to be continuing to move to Windows 10. And at the end of July, the price goes up to $119. So there, I think that this is the time to do it. Wouldn't you say that if you have not moved to Windows 10, you might as well do that now?
Yes, I highly encourage it.
If you're going to stick on Windows, I don't know why you wouldn't.
Yeah, because when you think about it, you make this one upgrade, you're not going to have to do this painful upgrade. I think that Windows 10 as it is will probably last a decade. What do you think?
Oh, easily.
So,
it's very solid.
Yeah. And the thing is, if you're going to make this upgrade and our computers are lasting so long, so if you just got a computer last year, you got another good 4 or 5 years with that thing, right?
Yep.
So,
at least, yeah. I mean, I've even bought a couple laptops this past year from 2011 just because Sandy Bridge is still fine and they've got the features I want. They show no signs of slowing down. The processor architectures have not improved that much since that long ago.
Yeah. The only reason to have a bleeding edge CPU today, I think, is if you're doing video encoding or, you know, streaming, because you use the CPU for that.
Yeah. If you're a normal user, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I mean, I talked about this last year that our technology is growing so robust and so strong that we can have computers that last 4 to 5 years, whereas you had to upgrade at least every 3 years, if not every 2 years, back in the early 2000s and 1990s, if you wanted to keep running the modern day software. So in a way, this kind of justifies Microsoft's long reach for Windows 10 as a lifespan device. So, I mean, if you have a strong computer, use Windows 10, and then your next computer will have Windows 10 built in anyways, so why not, right? And for those of you guys concerned about privacy, there's a whole page in the Windows 10 settings where you can tweak all the privacy settings to your content.
If you're going to complain too much, just go to Linux or something else, or build something from source. Just go to Gentoo, go to Arch, do what you need.
Yeah.
Stop complaining on something.
If you don't know what Gentoo and Arch are and you feel Windows 10 is a problem, then you should obviously just be sticking with Windows at that point, right?
Indeed.
Better write your own operating system.
Yeah, exactly. And I always say to people
online,
why are you on the internet if you're concerned about Windows 10? Are you on Facebook? Are you liking things on Facebook? If you are, you shouldn't be concerned with Windows 10, because Facebook knows more about you than Microsoft ever will.
That is correct.
So upgrade to Windows 10, people.
Cell phone? Yeah.
Exactly. And this is mainly going out to all the RuneScape listeners out there, because I know only 3% of you guys are on Windows 10. So please upgrade for the good of the internet.
3%? What?
Yep. The NXT client beta statistics said 3% of users were on Windows 10.
Is that just for the beta?
Just for the beta when they run the beta.
Okay. So I would hope that's not... I just can't imagine.
3% were also Windows XP.
Yikes. That's going to be as a joke. That's what?
It's alarmingly low is what it is.
Well, it wasn't a survey. They were gathering this through the client.
Yeah, no, but I mean, the beta was self-inclusive, whatever the term is, self-selective.
Yeah, I mean, if you had an old enough account, you were in the beta, so...
Yeah, I think I even got an email at one point.
Yeah,
like,
there
welcome.
You go.
And I was like, what are you talking about?
Anyways.
Speaking of which, holy heck, does it run nice now. Insanely better.
Exactly. Lots of people have found that, I mean, it just runs so much better than the Java client did. It's so smooth, and you can do so much more with it. So, very nice. Very nice.
Definitely.
Anyways, our last piece of tech news this week is a bit of news from space, that three potentially habitable worlds have been found orbiting a dwarf star. So a dwarf star is basically a very, very tiny, dim, and cool star. They're on average about 1.5 to 5 times the size of Jupiter, so gas giant size, but still they generate their own heat and whatnot, and they glow because they have reached that size and mass. So these three planets are about 40 light years away, and potentially reside within the habitable zone of that star. The idea is that there's one or two in the first part of the habitable zone, then one maybe further out on the fringe. So further observations will be done to try and figure out where exactly these are and potentially what the atmospheres of these planets hold based on the light shift that they get when observing them. So
neat.
Very interesting to find such a small star with planets that is so close, because 40 light years is relatively close from an astronomical point of view.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I always love these kinds of stories, and I'm absolutely fascinated with space as it is. But just to hear this, and the fact that, you know, there's three planets, you know, in this orbiting this star. I mean, that's more than what we have in our solar system, you know. So, I mean, Mars maybe a little bit, but I just think it's really cool to see this sort of stuff, you know, surface, I guess, partial pun intended. But, yeah, it's, and, you know, 40 million light years, you know, really is, astronomically speaking,
just
40 close.
Light years.
Yeah, just a mere, you know, oh, 40, gotcha, 40 yeah. light years. Yeah, I mean, that's very close considering all these, you know, the most famous galaxies we've, or, you know, what am I looking for? Hubble telescope pictures and stuff is like 200, you know, million light year, you know, these crazy numbers. And here we are finding possible three habitable planets that are, you know, so close. So anyway.
Yeah. And just because they orbit so close, because this is a red dwarf and they're in the habitable zone, the idea is that the orbital periods of these planets would be about 1.5 and 2.4 days, respectively. And the third one is less determined, but it's in the 4.5 to 73-day orbital period range. So that's how close these are. That determines how quick they orbit around the star. So... So basically that means 1 year on these planets would be 1.5 days or 2.4 days.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's very quick.
Indeed.
Buckle up.
Yeah. And, of course, this ultimately means that the planets are between 20 and 100 times closer to their star than the Earth is to the sun. So that, of course, enables that to happen just because of the characteristics of the star. But,
so yeah. You might get epilepsy on these planets with the days going by. You got, what, 6 minute days?
Yeah,
going
and
so
I mean,
quick.
Obviously we can't tell axial tilt, which determines seasons,
right.
But you can imagine if they had even a minor axial tilt like we do, there would be some wild temperature and potential weather swings on these planets given how quickly they move. So
I'm getting motion sickness just thinking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean, that would probably... That would probably, I think, preclude the existence of any kind of life out there. But, of
yeah,
course...
You know, you ever have winter come up on you like a straight-line wind? I mean, literally, okay, winter's here, blow you off the planet, and then send you off into space because the planet's going, you know, 700 freaking...
Yeah, but of course we also need to remember that life as we know it is limited to our own observations, whereas
oh,
it could
yeah.
be practically anything in this case. So.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, there's tech news this week. Hopefully you guys found that enjoyable. And please do upgrade to Windows 10. So, May skill of the month for wood cutting. We got some interesting statistics going on here.
Yeah.
Sorensen 57 has gained 5.4 million XP in wood cutting. And that's
Holy
bad.
Christ.
Got 2.6. While Parnassius has gained just a smidgen over 1 million XP. R.R. Matt is in fourth with 695K, and Flash is in third with 331,000 XP gained. So, interesting to see woodcutting here. And the primary skills, like woodcutting, mining, and fishing, are always cases of endurance to see who can spend the most time in-game and whatnot, and, of course, get the most XP with that. So, as always, these skills are anyone's game, even 4 days in, as it looks like Sorensen has added impressive lead here.
Indeed.
Oh, and Dave, I see you're competing a little bit. You got 9.7K worth.
Oh, I'm in it to win it, let me tell you. That is as much experience as it's taken me this week to get my strange rock. I will disclose that.
All right, fair enough. So, of course, we will be checking in with the competitors as we move throughout the month. So keep going, everyone, and don't let this turn into a one-man race. So, let's do some achievements of the week. First up, Undoer got 99 fletching on May 4th. Congratulations. Miss Alaska got 99 invention on the 3rd. Undoer 99 runecrafting on May 2nd. Dat Engineer got 99 invention on the 30th. J1, J2, J3 got 120 dungeoneering on April 30th. That's Trekkie. And Undoer once again got 99 smithing on April 30th and 99 woodcutting on April 29th. So congratulations.
That's a crazy busy week.
Yeah,
I was
going to
say Undoer is falling in the footsteps of good old Alex. Coming in hot with his 99s.
It's yeah, awesome. Well, Alex got them all in one day. Undoer spread them out for us. So,
this is correct.
And interesting to see two inventions here and a ring crafting. So,
yes, it is.
Good job, everyone. Happy to always report your achievements. It's a great thing to see progress being made. So, all right. So, we also have the Informer Roundup this week, which basically covers all of RSBNB Informer in April, which was NXT and then the Vampire Quest and then a couple of interesting things that were provided at the end in my tech article, which was entitled Boolean Algebra and Logic Gates. I know that's a gripping title, is it not?
It's so gripping. I can't let go.
Yeah, you should definitely give that a read.
Gripping door handle on the way out the door. It's good.
And Trekkie also provided a guest article about why he does not feel Hillary Clinton should be the next president.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And then, I mean, that's his thoughts. So we do publish those thoughts. And we invite anyone who wants to write a guest article for RSBNB Informer to get in contact with us, whether it be RuneScape or something else unrelated. So you can find this roundup at informer.rsbnb.com. And we should have some interesting things coming out of Informer this month because it is a free topic month. That means our writers will be able to write on whatever they want. They might choose RuneScape. They might choose something else. So it's going to be very interesting. All right.
Cool beans.
So I believe you have a pick of the week for us, Paul.
I do. It's called Plex. And what it is a media management solution, I guess you could call it. You basically host a server, either locally on your own computer, or you can have an actual server, or you can put it somewhere off in the cloud. You basically put all of your media there, be it music, if you want to use music. I just use videos, but and you can categorize TV shows, movies, just put it into folders, labeled as such, point your Plex client towards there, and it will download all the metadata for you, which is awesome. So it'll get all of the album art, it'll do intro music, so it'll get the episode titles, the episode synopsis, or at least the, you know, the general little blurb, tell you who's on it, tell you anything about the media file, and it'll categorize it by TV show, by genre, if it's a comedy, action, horror type deal. And then it's kind of like Netflix. You kind of just pick which one to watch and press play and off it goes. It'll stream on your phone, your tablet, your computer, Chromecast, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I've been using that more and more the last couple months with my NAS, and it is amazing. You don't need a complex setup. You can actually just do it on your own computer. And
that's what I do.
Just kinda, yeah, and it's fantastic. I can't live without it now.
Yeah. There's two really great things about Plex that you didn't mention. The first one is that you can practically throw any kind of media file at it, and it will transcode it immediately for streaming as you request it up.
As long as your processor's fast enough, you can do anything you need.
Yeah. And the second thing is that if you have an Apple TV box, they actually now, with the newest Apple TV, have an official application for the device. So it makes using it with the Apple ecosystem a lot easier than it used to be. You used to have to rely on AirPlay, which didn't send surround sound and all that kind of stuff as well. So those are two interesting little things that can come from it. But definitely a solid pick. And it works best over the LAN, I think. You'd want to use it over the LAN rather than the internet, I assume.
As long as you – well, yeah, I mostly use it internally, but I have it opened up. So if I want to get to it from outside, I can do it.
Right.
But yeah, and it just – it works really well. You can set streaming bit rates. If you are out away from where you actually are hosting this and you know your connection is not great, if you're doing it over data, as an example, you can make sure that you're streaming at a much lower quality, and as long as your server can keep up with the transcoding, or you can pre-transcode depending on, that might be actually a pro feature, I'm not positive. And then you can also, if you pay for it, this is all completely free. They do have a paid option that
$40 a year.
Or a one-time purchase of
$149,
$150. Yeah,
that's not too bad.
It's not bad for what you get. I wish it was lower. I guess it used to be about half that. And back then, I didn't have the hardware to support it, and I just never really look into it. But now that even if you run it locally, I would highly recommend just taking a look at it if you have any local media.
Really
neat.
And, I mean, I use this for all the transcoded home movies and whatnot, because a number of years ago I imported all of our old VHS tapes onto the network, and that's how this works now, is it goes through Plex. And then, of course, any kind of TV shows you might have downloaded works for as well. And it can also hook into an iTunes library if you use iTunes. So there's that. Good pick of the week. I like
it. Yeah, definitely.
Plex.tv. What kind of hardware are you running it on?
I have a quad-core Xeon with 16 gigs of RAM and other stuff.
Okay. Well, What have we been... Yeah, I mean, you don't necessarily need to run it on something large.
I've got other stuff going on. It's just a little sandbox on a FreeNAS server, so it's just kind of chilling.
Oh, okay, fair enough. All right, so what have we been doing, Dave? What you been up to this week on RS?
RS, the standard, just getting my strange rocks and knocking out trim requirements. I actually got a few knocked off this week. Probably been my most productive week since I've comped. Got my conquest requirement out of the way. Right before the show, I got my 4 Dragonkin journals from the Queen Black Dragon.
Ooh.
How many kills
did that take?
About 25 or 30, I think, in this sitting. I had only done about 10 before that. So, yeah, I mean, around 40 or so, which is right on par with the drop rate, because I'm pretty sure it's like 1 in 9 chance after your first kill. So, pretty in line with that. I'm probably going to be doing my chimp ices soon, maybe tomorrow. And then, obviously, the rest of the day tomorrow and throughout the weekend while I'm on, I will be at Runespan. So, come hang out with me on the High Level Island, because I will be there. Can't promise I'll talk, because I'll probably be AFKing. But, yeah, it'll be a good time. And by a good time, I mean AFKing, doing something completely completely different. So that's what I've been doing, and that's kind of my outlook for the next few days. So we're just going to be moving forward with that.
All righty. How about you, Paul? What you been up to on RS?
Clue scrolls, random things, just kind of trying to do what I used to do. Probably have to do some quests. Got 90 smithing and just hit 90 mining while I've been basically sitting here doing that, and I'm quarter way to 91, because that's how these rock things go.
Saren stones,
there's the ones, there you go.
It's
crazy good XP. It's been a lot of changes. And with a new client, I swear, this is crazy. Like, you can go to a populated area. This is just blowing my mind, because it used to, you'd go, I hated whenever the reset would happen every day, and you'd go to do your divine locations, go to World 2, and it was just, it was hard to do anything. And now it's not even a problem. Nothing. Just so much easier to do literally anything.
Yeah, and I mean, it all comes down to optimizations for the various platforms, and I mean, just
ditching
the fact,
the piece of crap that is Java.
Yeah, being able to break that 60 FPS barrier and all the colors available, and oh, that's so nice.
It's amazing. So yes. Glad that they did it.
Yeah, and I mean, it came out a lot faster than expected as well. So
yeah,
and people who, you know, had trouble running Java can probably run NXT, providing they have a decent computer from, I mean, 2 to 3 years ago. So it has a wide range of acceptability. So we like NXT. So if you guys aren't using NXT, that's another thing that you guys should definitely go out and check out. But for me this week on RS, I did a couple clue scrolls as well. Of course, check the Oyster, the Tutorial Island Oyster, at the beginning of every month. I'd like to remind everyone to go there and check that. And if you have monthly D&D tokens, you can use those on the Oyster to get a second roll on the treasure hunter table, or treasure trail table, rather, from the Oyster. So, I mean, who knows what you could get from that. So it's definitely, I think, one of the to-do monthly distractions and diversions. But aside from that, just been doing a few herb runs this week, getting back into that, and chopping crystal trees for invention. So that's about it.
Cool.
Yeah, so I think that means we're done for this episode. Thank you for coming, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
Always good to hear from you. And of course, Dave and I will be back next week to discuss, I don't think it'll be the quest, but maybe the invention stuff. So that should be interesting.
Looking forward to it, for sure.
And with that being said, we'll see you next week, everyone. Thank you for sharing your time with us. And remember to check out the 2016 Prestige suggestion on Rune Labs, bit.ly/RSPrestige2016, all one word. And of course, links will be in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com if you want more on that. So see you next week, everyone.
Adios.
Bye.